Stitched Up, stories of life and death from a prison doctor. Why would anybody want to work with thieves, murderers and rapists? Told from the inside out, this is a harrowing, humorous and hard-hitting tale of life behind bars by a prison doctor who has seen it all, literally. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from somewhere in the UK, I should imagine, the author of Stitched Up, stories of life and death from a prison doctor, Dr. Shahid Yousaf. Doctor, can I just call you Shahid, please?
Yes, you can, yeah, or you can call me Dr. Y if you want.
Dr. Y, that sounds like the Marvel superhero that we've been looking for and not had yet.
The Marvel superhero no one wants.
Morning to you. Whereabouts are you, by the way, this morning?
Morning, Giles. I'm speaking to you from sunny Birmingham.
Ah, marvellous. No, nothing like it. Right then, looking at... So, again, it's something that I don't think would have crossed many people's radar, because people go, you know, you go into the medical profession to serve your fellow man in all circumstances, and there can be no finer example of working with the wide spectrum of humanity, I suppose, than working in Her Majesty's prisons. Explain to me a little bit about your background. And what led you to working in a prison?
Yeah, so I thought I was going to end up in some fancy place doing Botox for millions and millions of pounds and driving a Ferrari, to be fair. To an extent, we all are motivated by money. However, my life took a sharp trajectory when my father died unexpectedly. So it was all very sudden, and it was the night before finals. So you can imagine that's when, you know, it happens to us. It happens to all of us, doesn't it? Where you think your life is going in one direction and then it just takes a very sharp left. So what I did was I decided I wanted to help the most vulnerable people in society. So in fact, the very first job I took when I qualified as a GP was to be a homeless GP. So a GP for the homeless people.
Yeah.
And it was only whilst doing that that I realized pretty much in the first few months, as winter approached, lots of the homeless community were committing petty crimes to go to prison where they'd be warm, have food, have some company. And I followed my patients. So I followed my patients from being homeless to being in prisons. And that's how I started working in prisons 10 years ago.
So let's do the nuts and bolts, because you can't presumably just rock up at the door of, and is this presumably a prison in Birmingham, or whereabouts were you based?
Yeah, so I've worked in 12 prisons in the UK, in the Midlands, but also with London prisoners. So this book, which Stitched Up, what I've done is I've created this prison, but it's not about any one prison. It's because the problems are ones that I've seen in all 12 prisons.
Right. Okay. What's the process of becoming a prison doctor? Because you would need a peculiar skill, and I use the word peculiar advisedly, a peculiar skill set to be a prison doctor. I mean, do you just say, hello, you know, I've got these qualifications and I want to come and work inside a prison?
Yeah, pretty much, actually, Giles. It's only after talking to you and having written my book, I think, yeah, maybe there should have been a little bit more preparation. But literally, I rocked up and I shadowed the other doctors who were there for a week, and yeah, they were gone by the end of the week. But this book, Stitched Up, is a thank you to my wonderful colleagues, and that's office managers, that's pharmacy staff, pharmacy technicians, nurses, admin, paramedics. If it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have known what I was doing. So it's these people who often don't get a shout out who deserve the shout out.
People have a preconditioned idea of what, or preconceived idea of what prison is like. And it's not until you actually walk in that you realise that that's completely what's been thrown at you from movies and TV and whatever else. So when you were faced with the situation, what were your first impressions of? And I mean, is there a consulting room? Do you go and attend to prisoners in their cells if they're feeling a bit off colour? Is it a surgery? I mean, how does it work?
Yeah. So, a GP office, which is pretty much exactly like any GP practice that you would see in the community, apart from the fact that there are bars in the windows. And my view, most of the time in most of the prisons I've worked in, would look out onto a great white wall, which encircles the prison, and it's covered in razor wire, and it's patrolled by officers and sniffer dogs. other than that, you could be in a normal community GP practice. But yes, I do have to go and see patients on the wings. I do have to go and see patients in their cells. I think the thing that shocked me the most was that it's me and a patient who is a prisoner in a room together with no officer. I never thought I'd be unaccompanied, that there'd be no officer, but no, doctors and nurses in prisons, when they do the consultation, it's just you and the patient for patient confidentiality.
What category of prison have you worked in? Are we talking like Cat A on this one? Are we talking high security? Or are we talking about one of the, I'm using this word as layman's terms, as a more conventional prison?
So I've worked in all prisons from A, B, C, D. I've worked in the male estate, I've worked in the female estate, and I've worked in young offenders institutes. And the experiences that I boil down in this book are what you would find in a normal Cat B remand prison.
One of the things that is going to, because people say, oh, it's going to be, the book's going to be full of, people trying to smuggle weapons and the whole thing and all that sort of situation. But let's get into the nuts and bolts of it. A lot of people, you mentioned it in the beginning of the interview about the homeless people you worked with on the streets, purposely going into prison to escape the cold of winter, etc., have a roof over their head, company and something to eat. If you work with the homeless, the addictions they have, the particular problems that they have, and these presumably are transferred. Because if you're coming in off the streets, or if you are a drug addict or an alcoholic, and you do a custodial sentence, if you've got to go cold turkey or trying to dry out, that's a huge, and if you haven't been through it, you don't know the horrors of going through, you're coming off anything. It's presumably prison is, I know that some people say, oh, the short, sharp shock, it's good for them, but it's a pretty dire, you sort of medical place to do a detox.
Giles, I mean, you're not a medical expert, but you've pretty much, that's it in a nutshell. That's it. That's what this book is about. We should not be treating people with substance misuse issues in prison. They should be treated in the community, which is, evidence has shown, is much more effective, and it's 50% cheaper. So we are spending this. So what, even if you don't have very much sympathy for prisoners themselves, because you think, they've done the crime, they need to do the time, they need the short, sharp shock, prison works, all of these things that all the various parties say, at the end of the day, we are spending £44,000 per prisoner per year. And just to put that into context, a prison officer's starting wage is £22,000. For every person we do not send to prison, we could afford to pay two prison officers. We haven't got the money to be wasting on a broken system. Take the substance misuse issues that need to be treated, treat them in the community, community orders, non-custodial. We can make our society a better society.
And presumably as well, I mean, that's quite a shocking figure that you've said, 44,000 per prisoner, and then what the office, yeah, prison officer gets paid. But you've also, I mean, we're talking the physical, the problems that they have, like I said, addiction or whatever they're going through. But also there's lots of, mental health issues are quite rightly something that people are looking at, but they're not looking at, I don't think, to those people who find themselves in prison, and it's not a Hollywood movie, you're not hanging out with your gang buddies. And for a lot of people, the shock, and people say that's great, but the mental shock for people, the psychological, especially for a first time offender who found themselves at 17, 18 years old in there, in that whole system, to stop them becoming criminalized and their mental health problem that they may have had from before. I mean, because presumably as a doctor, you've seen this as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So approximately 70% of prisoners report having mental health issues. Now, this is on the background of the fact that the mental health beds in England have been cut by 73% since 1987. So we are seeing people in prison who should not be in prison. They should be in a mental health unit. And oftentimes what happens is that they come to prison, they are psychotic, they're acutely unwell, we assess them, a psychiatrist will see them, they get sectioned, and then they're waiting to go to a community mental health bed. But unfortunately, we don't have enough community mental health beds. So these guys are rotting in prison, and it's not where they should be.
Tell me a little bit about then. I mean, presumably the an option would have been in previous years just to keep a lot of people docile and keep them quiet. I mean, I'm not laughing because I don't think it says it's funny. I'm just laughing because it's all the voice, because a lot of people was sort of it makes a point, or it makes life easier if you keep people almost semi-sedated through their prison experience or their prison sentence.
Yeah, I mean, so there are approximately 88,000 men, women and children currently in prison, and we have approximately 80,000 kids in care. And some people see it as it's a factory. You know, people in care end up going to prison. And so these are people who have been really distressed. They're the most vulnerable members of our society. They will have more mental health issues than, you know, people like us. And yes, there are substance misuse issues. I'm a substance misuse doctor as well as being a GP. So when people come in, as you quite rightly said, Giles, if they have alcohol or heroin issues, you can't cold turkey. You will die. You need to be brought down with methadone, Subutex, diazepam, medications like that by experts so that you don't go into extremis. And that's what we do. But at the end of the day, there have been swinging cuts to the prison budget, and every prison I've been to, we don't have enough officers. We've lost 10,000 officers since 2010. And that's because the budget was cut by a quarter. How society works is that everything's interlinked. So you will see that police officers get cut, crime goes up. Prison officers get cut, crime goes up. What we want for prisons, I'm not saying that close down all the prisons and release everyone. What we want from prisons is we want it to rehabilitate people. And then it would be worth the £44,000 that we're paying per prisoner. But in fact, 50% of people go on to commit a crime within a year. Prisons aren't working. They're going to release someone who could be living next door to you, who's going to burgle your house. That doesn't make it safe for you or I.
Mm. Yeah, that's, I mean, there's a whole argument about rehabilitation against, if you like, well, they should be in there because, and that's, let's move away from that particular one. What's the general health of prisoners like? Because, you know, a lot of these people probably haven't had, been to a doctor or a GP. I mean, were you shocked by the malnourishment, or not malnourishment, but the general sort of idea of how good the health of prisoners are?
Yeah, exactly. So the way I describe it is it's like working in A&E if you are working by yourself and you're working in a toilet, because you may be in a room that has minimal working equipment. I mean, even the light might be faulty. And that's to compare it with what the prison cells are like, where you literally sleep on a wooden board. There's two of you sharing a cell. You're sharing a toilet, which may not be curtained off. You may have a window which doesn't open. You may have water. A kettle and a television will be considered privileges. Laundry is considered a privilege. I mean, these are inhumane circumstances. And the thing is, the purpose of prison is to rehabilitate people, reintegrate them into society, not to brutalize people. You want people to come out of prison and to be better people and to be, you know, serving society. And that's what they're doing in Norway. That's what they're doing in Portugal. We're not doing it in Britain because the parties are all fighting each other to be tough on crime. To be tough on crime, you need to bring down the crime figures. The violent crime figures have increased every year since 2013. Prison doesn't work.
I've spoken to various people who've worked, for example, as art teachers in prison, and they were saying, you know, they have to be careful about the bits and pieces coming in and out, presumably because I'm looking at the front page of the book and there seems to be a scalpel on the front of the cover of the book, and stuff like that, needles, etc. I mean, you must be very careful. I'm not going to get salacious about the details of people smuggling razor blades or whatever, but presumably it is something you have to be a little bit more mindful of.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I think one of the reasons that I called the book Stitched Up was that we spend a lot of our time stitching people up. So there are people who are, you know, really mentally unwell, who cut up, who basically just cut themselves every day. And there are also cannibals who eat themselves.
I'm sorry, just run that by me again. I'm sorry. There are auto cannibals. who eat themselves.
There are people who are so distressed. So there's a condition, a psychiatric condition called PICA, P-I-C-A, and that is where people eat non-edible matter, such as chalk or oil or poison. There are people who eat their own hair, which is called Rapunzel syndrome. And there are people who bite their fingernails, very common, but there are people who swallow their fingernails, and then there are people who cut off their ears and eat them. It's not something that I've seen once or twice. I've seen it quite a few times. Also cannibals.
Right, okay. You learn something new every day, and anybody who's just finishing their breakfast, my apologies, but there you go. Wow. So that's quite something. But you, so you call it stitched up, presumably there, you know, because people glamorize the violence in prisons as well. And you say, I mean, is there a lot of, I'm not saying we're on a sort of an American style, you know, settling of scores in exercise yards or whatever, but presumably there is some justice that gets melted out and you have to sort of pick up the pieces, clean up the bits and stitch up the other bits.
Absolutely. So especially on one of the chapters is called Black Eye Fridays. And so Fridays is canteen day, which is where the goods that you've ordered have come in. And that's when debts get settled because the debts work on a system of double bubble. I'm sure some of your listeners, you know, may have come across some of this stuff before. They, you know, they'll know what double bubble means. It means that if you owe £1 on day one, it's £2 on day two. It's incremental. And if you don't settle your bills, it's some tins of tuna in a sock. And then we have to see them, stitch them up, their teeth get knocked out. Our dentist who works on site and our dental technicians, who are amazing staff, will try to salvage their smile and put the teeth back. I mean, it's grim and it's heartbreaking, but I hope it's also heartwarming in parts.
This is the thing. There is, when any, you know, I speak to paramedics and I speak to doctors on the front line or whatever, and there's a gallows humour to this whole situation. And presumably, if you've got a bit of a sense for the macabre, or you've got that sort of sense of humor, this is multiplied by tenfold when you're working in, you know, at HMP.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, I'm a goth, so I like horror and that sort of stuff anyway. Always have, love sci-fi, any of that sort of stuff. This is when I was a child. I think I saw The Exorcist when I was about 5. Please don't judge my parents.
No.
And I was like, this is amazing. I could watch this every day. So, yeah, I love that sort of stuff. But I think when you're working with people and you're seeing it in real life, there's a difference between fact and fiction. And that's when it gets to you. That's when you're like, no, I need to help. What can I do? My go-to line whenever I see anyone is, how can I help? And that's what I want to do. And that's what all the staff who work in prisons want to do. They just want to make people's lives a little bit easier.
How easy is it to sort of suspend judgment and look at somebody who, as just a patient, when you may know their backstory? Maybe they're a rapist. Maybe they have done something, you know, maybe they're a killer. Does that give you here's a highly technical term, Dr. Y, a severe case of the collywobbles before you go in?
Yeah, again, that's such a good question. And in fact, it's the question that led to me writing this book. Because I got asked so many times, how can you work with thieves, murderers and rapists? Well, the short answer is, I don't know what they've done. So their prison record is kept on a separate system called PNOMIS, and I have access to the healthcare records, and I have purposefully made sure I do not have a username or password for PNOMIS, because that would lead to a breakdown in the doctor-patient relationship. If I knew that they had done something really horrendous, I would have difficulty in suspending that sense of compassion that I would have.
Here's the thing, okay, because if you're in prison and, you know, if you're sitting there and you've got to act tough, if you're a young person, you've got to, you know, man up and whatever, because you've got to get through the next 5 years for something you've done. And something's up with them, something, they've got a medical issue and they come and see you. You're perhaps the only point of, and you've got that confidentiality agreement and they can talk to you. Presumably that you could be the only human being that they talk to in the way that they don't talk to another prisoner, or they definitely don't talk to a prison officer.
Oh, most definitely. And that's why, you know, I think if you genuinely care about people, and I genuinely care about people, you know, all laughs aside, all the statistics aside, at the end of the day, I'm a doctor because I like people. You do hear the most horrendous things. And the thing with talking is that, you know this. This is what you do for your job. It can be the easiest thing in the world. And then when you're having a conversation, you're walking with someone through their lives. And that's what's valuable about it. Sometimes just talking is therapy in itself. They just want you to hear something. You've heard it. They feel better. then if you can do things to make their lives a little bit easier, that's the icing on the cake, isn't it?
Is there, I mean, give me a feel good story, if you like. Is there a case? Have you diagnosed somebody that's obviously, if it's presumably more, if they pick up a diagnosis and it's something more serious, they're whisked off to the prison hospital, I would presume, or have you had that? And we're going to go to Hollywood parlance here, Dr. Y. Have you managed to sort of get that chink of light and expand it, and they had a complete Shawshank moment? If I don't mean bury through the wall, but they've gone out and they've improved their lives, or is that just Hollywood invention?
No, it's true. Yeah, and that is the core story, dude. It's as if you wrote the book, let alone read the book. It's as if you wrote it with me. That's absolutely right. So there's the story of Jamie Lovell, who features throughout the book, and there are other characters as well, and obviously they're not based on just one person. It's based on a few people, because this is 10 years of experience that's been boiled down into one book. But yeah, the guys that come in who are illiterate, aggressive, who talk with their fists, and then by the fact that you are a person of stability, you're not just the locum doctor, you're someone that they see year on year, they do start to take advice. And in the case of Jamie Lovell, he was illiterate and was very aggressive. We did not get on at all. By the end of it, he worked with the Shannon Trust Literacy Agency, learned to read, learned to teach other people to read, wrote poetry, much softer character, much nicer person because of it at the end. Haven't seen him in a long time.
That's good news. The book is called Stitched Up: Stories of Life and Death from a Prison Doctor. It's by Dr. Shahed Yousaf, who's been speaking to today, or Dr. Y, if you like. If people want to find you online or find out more about the book, where can they track you down?
Yep, so you could go to the Penguin site and look for Stitched Up. That's got all the links. Or you can go on Twitter, where I am, Brown is New Black.
Brown is New Black. I like that. As a person called Giles Brown, that'll suit me no problem at all. only begs the question, is there at any point do you sit back and think, I could have been doing the Botox in Marbella and driving the Ferrari, or is it worth more than the money?
I've got a lot of friends in Marbella. I go to Spain all the time. No, I should have chosen the Botox. No. I'm really happy with my life choice. I'm very happy with it.
The book is called Stitched Up: Stories of Life and Death from a Prison Doctor. It will be available as a virtual download as well. Dr. Y, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on today.
I loved it, Giles. That's probably one of the most fun interviews I've done at all. I loved it. Thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure's been all mine.